Hello and good afternoon, everyone. Thanks everyone for joining us this afternoon. This is Josh Berry from the ASTO team. Welcome to our final Tobacco Control Network virtual deskside briefing. To kick things off, I will turn things over to the chair of TCN, Amanda Mortensen. Amanda.
Thank you, Josh, and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Amanda Mortensen, and I serve as the chair of the TCN Executive Committee. I'm also the program manager of Tobacco Free Nebraska within the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services. On behalf of the TCN Executive Committee, I'm so happy to welcome the TCN members and partners joining us this afternoon on the fourth and final installment of our TCN Deskside Briefing Series, in which we convene brief, audio-only presentations to provide technical assistance without overly contributing to the virtual meeting fatigue. With that in mind, I hope everyone has an opportunity to relax and listen in on today's presentation, communicating the risks of tobacco use and COVID-19. For quick logistical overview, we will be recording this deskside briefing so that we can share it on an archive of the presentation through the resource tab on the TCN website and through TCN News. We ask that all participants keep themselves on mute for the duration of the deskside briefing to eliminate the possibility of distracting background noise. Participants can utilize Zoom chat functions for any information sharing or discussion and can also submit questions to our speakers. And now I'm excited to turn the floor over to our first speaker this afternoon, Dr. Brian King. Dr. King is the Deputy Director for Research Translation for the CDC Office on Smoking and Health, where he provides scientific leadership and technical expertise to inform tobacco control policy and to effectively communicate this information to key stakeholders, the media, and the general public. Thank you, Dr. King, for starting us off this afternoon. The floor is yours.
Great, thanks so much. So I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you all on the latest and greatest in terms of the extent of the science on COVID-19 and where we can effectively message. I'm gonna follow some slides that I've prepared that will be shared with you afterwards. The bottom line for my presentation today is really to follow the science. And there's a lot happening when it comes to COVID-19. But one of the few silver linings is that given it's a pandemic, there's a lot of science happening across the globe and being done by a variety of different entities. And that's ultimately really useful for us to help inform our evidence-based recommendations that we make to the public. And that said, when it comes to the available science, one thing that we have known for many years is that cigarette smoking harms the immune system. And so there's been multiple Surgeon General's reports that have alluded to this issue, and the 2014 50th anniversary report really articulated a variety of different conclusions that focused on this immune suppression issue. And the bottom line is that the evidence is sufficient to infer that cigarette smoking compromises the immune system and that altered immunity is associated with increased risk for pulmonary infections. And so, you know, obviously COVID-19 is a pulmonary infection. But that said, there's been a lot of talk around the potential role that smoking may have in the unique situation of COVID-19. And that's specifically because the area of the human cell where this virus attaches to is also an area that is activated by nicotine exposure. And so it's specifically called ACE2, which is the specific receptor. So that's where this virus binds. And we also know that cigarette smokers have higher ACE2 gene expression and a greater ACE2 receptor concentrations in the lungs of smokers. And so that said, there's kind of a perfect scenario here for a mechanism where smoking and exposure to nicotine could increase the risk of not only infection with the virus that causes COVID-19, but also this more severe illness among people who get COVID-19. So that said, where are we with the extent of the existing evidence? Well, before we started to get a lot of studies specifically on smoking in COVID-19, we had to rely on what was happening for previous coronaviruses. And so we know that COVID-19 is not the first disease caused by a coronavirus, but there was actually SARS as well as MERS in years past. And so when we look at these viruses, the virus that causes SARS is about 80% similar to the virus that causes COVID-19. And the one that causes MERS is about about 50% close. So when we initially were looking at the extent of the science for some of these early coronaviruses, we were really looking at SARS to see what the relationship was with smoking. And in that case, the evidence was inadequate to conclude that cigarette smoking changes your risk of SARS. But there was some suggestive evidence that cigarette smoking increases MERS infection risk. And so we were basing a lot of our initial recommendations to the public on what we knew from previous coronaviruses. But now we have a growing body of science telling us where the science sits on these issues. And so when it comes to COVID-19, an important distinction that we have to make, though, is between infection with the virus and more severe illness once you've got it. And so the science is in two very different places right now between those two things. And so we have to be careful that we disentangle that, you know, is smoking going to increase your risk of getting infected if you don't already have it? And what is the effect, you know, once you do have it, is smoking going to modify that? So let's walk through the first one first. So that's infection with the virus that causes COVID-19. Right now, the scientific evidence is inadequate to tell us whether if you do not have any infection, that if you smoke, that's going to increase your likelihood of infection. Some studies have reported that smoking has even protected against infection. Very early on, there were people suggesting that, you know, if you smoke or exposed to nicotine, that could increase your likelihood of or decrease the likelihood that you're going to get infected. So would somehow protect you. The bottom line is a lot of that messaging was based on flawed studies that were very early on that didn't necessarily have a robust evidence base or weren't replicated. So, you know, right now the evidence is insufficient on this issue, and we certainly don't want people who are non-smokers rushing to get, you know, nicotine products, which is effectively what happened in France and other areas following those reports. But the bottom line is there's a lot of limitations to those studies that have found this protective effect. And there's also many of have not been peer reviewed in the scientific literature. And so where we are right now is we don't have enough evidence to say that if you smoke, you're going to have an increased risk of infection with the virus. But where we do have a robust body of evidence is if you already have COVID-19, the likelihood of more severe illness is greater if you are a current or a former smoker. And so CDC's website has a list of people who are at higher risk for severe illness, and it includes older adults, as well as adults with a variety of different medical conditions, including, you know, cancer, COPD, heart conditions. And smoking was recently added to that list of people who the science shows will have more severe illness. So this is a very safe arena to message on in terms of a scientific evidence-based approach. And we now have well over 75 individual studies that have found this association and multiple meta-analyses, which is the fancy term that for scientists when we look at all the available studies and we merge them together to see a combined effect. And all of those are showing that if you are a current or a former smoker and you get COVID-19, it's a higher likelihood of more severe illness, which means higher likelihood of things like hospitalization, being admitted to the intensive care unit, or even death. So that's cigarette smoking. Given the potential role of nicotine in ACE2, as I discussed before, there's a lot of people talking about e-cigarettes. Well, you know, if you use e-cigarettes, is that going to have the same effect on disease severity as cigarette smoking? And the bottom line there is the jury's still out there as well. And we did have one recent cross-sectional study that was done by folks in California, finding an association between e-cigarette use and various risks of COVID-19 among young people. But it's important to note that that's just one study. So it's a good start in terms of hypothesis generating, and we need further research to see, you know, whether it was actually the COVID-19 and the smoking and e-cigarettes, or if there was something else besides e-cigarettes. You know, maybe these youth and young adults were already at higher risk for to engage in other, you know, riskier behaviors. And so right now, and based on the extent of the science, we can't say either way, well, e-cigarettes are associated with either incident infection with the virus or with more severe illness. But of course, we do know that our standard public health messaging still holds that you know, e-cigarette aerosol is problematic. And there are certain populations that should never be using these things, like, you know, youth, young adults, pregnant women, and non-smokers. Now, the other area we get a lot of questions around secondhand smoke and e-cigarette aerosol and COVID-19. The bottom line here is also that the evidence is still scant here. However, we do know that, you know, COVID-19 is a respiratory disease. It's transmitted by respiratory droplets, and transmission risk increases when people engage in behaviors that increase the likelihood of transferring those respiratory droplets. So what is that? Well, if you're smoking a cigarette or using an e-cigarette, you're not going to be wearing a face covering, and it's higher likelihood that you're going to transmit respiratory droplets into the public. And the same thing, you know, transmission risk is going to increase when people engage in activities that increase the likelihood of touching their mouths and their faces. And so simply the act of smoking or e-cigarette use is going to increase the likelihood of respiratory droplets. But whether, you know, cigarette smoke itself or e-cigarette aerosol is somehow, you know, a conduit to transport a virus is something that is simply not proven at present. So we can't say either way in terms of increased risk. So that said, based on all these scenarios, you know, where is it a safe lens for us to message in terms of public health implications? Well, public health messaging can communicate that cigarette smoking increases the severity of illness among COVID-19 patients. That is proven based on the scientific evidence. It's also important that we ensure that studies that suggest smoking protects against SARS-CoV-2 infection are not misinterpreted as a reason to use tobacco or nicotine products. We definitely don't want people rushing for nicotine exposure, thinking it's somehow going to protect them, particularly if they're a non-tobacco product user already. The science does not suggest that nicotine is protective. And regardless of the association with COVID-19, we still have our bread and butter messaging. The adverse health effects of smoking are well documented and irrefutable. Now is a better time than ever to quit, particularly during a pandemic and given that risk of more severe illness for COVID-19 and smoking. Smoking harms nearly every organ of the body, and quitting smoking is beneficial at any age. And we know that smoking compromises the immune system, which can increase the risk of SARS-CoV-2, a severe illness. And then finally, when it comes to secondhand exposures, you know, clean air, free of both secondhand smoke and secondhand aerosol, remains that standard to protect public health. And we've been seeing a lot of casinos and others going smoke-free in the result of the pandemic, and that's a good thing. We're hoping that they do keep them to protect people's health and lungs even after the pandemic, and that's irrespective of any potential relationship with COVID-19 and tobacco use. And so in terms of key takeaways here, we know smoking harms nearly every organ of the body, and it's been shown to compromise the immune system. That's a very safe, effective messaging point. In terms of the available science, it's still inconclusive on whether cigarette smoking increases the risk of infection with the virus that causes COVID-19. The evidence is also insufficient on e-cigarettes and also secondhand exposures. But where we do have strong evidence right now is that if you are a current or former cigarette smoker, it's going to increase that risk of more severe illness among people with COVID-19. So with that, I'd encourage you to see the resources that CDC has on our web in terms of our messaging. If you go to www.cdc.gov/COVID-19, you can get more information on these risk factors where CDC has reviewed the science and also more information specifically on smoking. Thanks for your time today, guys.
Thank you, Dr. King. Now I'm excited to turn the floor over to our second speaker this afternoon, Anna Arkin. Anna is a tobacco cessation communications planner with the Minnesota Department of Health. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, Anna. Please take it away.
Great. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm looking forward to talking about the smoking and COVID messages we've developed here in Minnesota, which are based on a lot of what Dr. King just covered, and how we've disseminated those messages. So I'll start by providing a little background on how we got to where we are today. In late March of 2020, the Minnesota Department of Health, or MDH, was about to launch the state's new cessation programs and rapidly ramping up our COVID-19 response and messaging. We realized that in order for the messaging and public relations pitch for our QUIP partner launch to be relevant and grab people's attention, we would need to pivot our launch strategy and incorporate messages about the potential impact of smoking and maybe vaping on risks of COVID-19. We couldn't just talk about these new cessation programs in a vacuum because we knew no one would pay attention or hear what we had to say. And we could even risk a negative reaction for not being sensitive to the situation in which we were launching. At the same time, we carefully considered any possible perceptions of us taking advantage of the situation with COVID-19 to promote our QUIP partner programs. So we were very intentional in our wording and tone. About 10 days before the April 1st launch of QUIP partner, we were able to contract with external researchers to gather the latest evidence about any relationship between smoking, vaping, and COVID-19. Based on their research, we put together some high-level talking points and supporting points. We were working in the context of broader agency communications around COVID. MDH had recently stood up a new COVID communications team, reassigning communicators from different parts of the agency. And as part of this, the agency had established an approval process for all COVID-related messages. So once we had created our smoking and COVID talking points, we coordinated with our public information officer and this new COVID comms team to have the messages and new strategy approved. Our talking points are similar to the information that Dr. King just covered, and you can read them at www.health.mn.gov/quit#COVID-19, and you're welcome to use or adapt them. Over time, we've updated these messages a number of times to reflect new research, more closely aligned with messages from the CDC, and include information about health equity. We've also included information about tobacco-related disparities on MDH's newer health equity and COVID-19 webpage. Our talking points end with a cessation call to action. We've emphasized that you can get free quit support online, by phone, and by mail. You don't have to leave home to get help. Though people are staying home, we want them to know that they don't have to go at it alone. We're here to help them quit. And we always make sure we're putting forth a supportive and not a fear-based message and tone. As a side note, on May 1st, we added two questions to the Quit Partner intake process to assess the impact COVID-19 is having on people who are choosing to connect with our program. So far, we've seen that a high percentage of people enrolling in Quit Partner say that they want to quit because of COVID-19. At the same time, a high percentage of people enrolling are smoking more because of COVID-19, which isn't necessarily surprising based on other anecdotes we've heard, but the idea that COVID-19 may be resulting in more tobacco use is a concern. So back to our messaging, we incorporated our smoking and COVID messages into a number of our communications. If you visit our cessation program's website at quitpartnermn.com, you'll see that we added a banner at the top of the website linking to information about smoking and COVID risks. We also pulled out one main message to incorporate into our news release, public relations pitch, social media posts, and other messages about the launch of our Quit Partner programs. That message was, according to the CDC, smoking can compromise the immune system, which makes people at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. Together with our marketing contractor, we had a successful PR pitch, which resulted in a number of print and TV interviews, and our press release was picked up by a number of media outlets. We were also able to get PSAs played on local radio stations. Much of this exposure happened because our audience and partners realized that there's a clear link between smoking and lung health, and that it was of paramount importance to deliver cessation information to Minnesota residents. Besides including the messages in our cessation web pages and materials, we've also partnered with our chronic disease programs at MDH to include smoking and COVID messages in their materials. Through these partnerships and use of our email platform, our messages have reached tens of thousands of subscribers. We've also engaged with our executive office to deliver talking points to our health commissioner, who has talked about smoking and Quit Partner in some of the agency's media briefings on COVID-19. As communities began to feel the effects of our stay-at-home orders early in the pandemic, as well as growing employment and in some instances, food scarcity, we worked with internal and external partners to develop new methods and materials to reach communities. For example, with partners, we developed a postcard that had COVID-19 and tobacco cessation messaging and mailed it to nearly 12,000 low-income households in multi-unit housing throughout the state. And we're about to do this again. We included a simple call to action, which was translated into Hmong, Somali, and Spanish. And a copy of this postcard is available on our Quit Partner website, along with other promotional materials that include COVID messaging that are also in multiple languages. Another example is a partnership with MDH Tribal Health colleagues and our tribal tobacco coordinators to create a flyer for American Indian communities to be included in food distribution boxes. Partner organizations have also used our COVID messages in their communications materials. To continue to advance our work around COVID-19 and tobacco messaging, we plan to continue to update our messages to include the latest information, as well as expand our partnerships both inside and outside of our agency to spread the word with cessation as a call to action. We'd like to do more evaluation of our messages, and another new area for us will be to coordinate with our immunization colleagues at MDH on messaging about cessation and the COVID vaccine. I'd be interested in hearing more from all of you about how you've combined messages about cessation and vaccination. Thanks so much for having me on the call today, and I'm happy to take questions. You can also email me at anna.argin@state.mn.us.
Thank you so much, Dr. King and Anna, for your presentation. We did set aside some time for Q&A today, so I am going to turn things over to Liana Barattis, the analyst of chronic disease prevention at ASHTO, to moderate for us. Liana, will you take it away, please?
Thank you, Amanda. I just want to remind everyone to feel free to use the chat function to submit questions as we move along. But to get us started, I'll direct my first question to Dr. King. Dr. King, what are best practices and or things to avoid when communicating the most up-to-date science on COVID-19 and tobacco use?
Yeah, so when it comes to, the best practices, I really think it's just stick to the science. And so, we know the smoking is going to increase more severe illness, and we know the immunosuppression lanes are very safe scientifically. So I think focusing on those is really best, and avoid kind of these areas where the science is still uncertain, because it could jeopardize the integrity of your entire message or your credibility. What we don't want to be doing is jumping out early on topics where there isn't a robust evidence base, or you may lose credibility on the back end. That said, there was a recent study that was published by the folks at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, that really articulated the fact that these messages are effective in terms of perceived effectiveness to reach people. And so, combining that smoking and the COVID-19 content is helpful in terms of registering with the public. And so, again, sticking to the science is really key in terms of best practices, and avoiding some of these areas where we just don't have the science. And it doesn't mean we may not eventually have the science, but when you have something that there's over 75 studies showing it, that's going to carry more weight than something, like e-cigarettes, where we only have one study. So don't hang your hat on an area where there isn't a robust evidence base.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Dr. King. I'll direct my second question to Anna. How can COVID-19 be used as an opportunity to further cessation communication efforts?
Hi, I think including smoking COVID messages in communications makes your communication salient in this time. News outlets, for example, are primarily running COVID stories. People on social media are interested in COVID news. So including that COVID information in your cessation messages, with cessation as a call to action, including resources on how people can get help from home, makes your messages relevant in these times.
Thank you so much, Anna. And thank you to both of you for participating in this Q&A section of this event. We don't have any more questions in the chat box at this moment, but please feel free to ask any as we follow up. I'm sorry, we just got one last one. A lot of what I'm hearing is loss in public trust in COVID data because the information changes. So new information is found out. So thank you for sharing that, Jen. And with that, I will turn it over to to Amanda Mortensen for our conclusion. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Liana. As a quick reminder before we adjourn, we always like to encourage our members to visit the TCN website at tobaccocontrolnetwork.org to access its numerous resources, which include a member directory, an interactive tobacco policy map, archives of the TCN newsletter, and past TCN resources, along with plenty of other features. This concludes today's Desk Side Briefing and the full Desk Side Briefing series. I would like to once again thank Dr. Brian King and Anna Arkin for joining us. I would also like to thank our colleagues at ASTO for making this briefing possible. I'd like to thank CDC OSH Program Services Branch for supporting our work. In the coming months, keep an eye out for future TCN virtual learning opportunities that will help the TCN membership address the many new and familiar challenges facing all of us in state and territorial tobacco control. If you have any questions or any recommendations for future topics, please don't hesitate to reach out to us by email at tcn@ashto.org. Thank you for joining us today, and enjoy the rest of your day. Bye.